come after. As a cosmologist, I'm exhilarated we can make some progress towards tackling what seem very fundamental questions. These programs focus on what's the beginning, whether we are alone, what's the future of the cosmos, what is the nature of reality. With each advance, new questions come into sharper focus. The key issue is what we still don't know.
All right, we're live. Sort of. I always have to say that. It is April 29th, maybe. I always get the date wrong when we do these things. I think it's the 29th. I'm here with Adam. We'll just call him Adam B., Mr. X. He is filling in, sort of, for our good friend Moses, who last minute couldn't make it, which is too bad because we had some really cool things to talk about. So this show... Specifically, Adam and I are wearing our tinfoil hats. We're going to talk about the Fermi paradox. We're going to talk about, and in relation to the fact that it's Hubble's birthday, 25th year that Hubble's been out, which is really cool. I remember being a kid and seeing that go up. You remember that at all?
Yeah, I do remember when they Hubble did go up.
Mm-hmm. From what I remember, it went up, and then there was something was off by like a tenth of a millimeter, and it screwed up the whole system. And so they were just getting, it was like myopic. They couldn't get any clear pictures, and then they had to send someone up there to fix it.
Yeah.
I don't know, I was 12 or something.
Did you see the Russian rocket is falling back to Earth?
Yeah, it didn't make it?
Yeah.
It was like a supply one, right?
Yeah, just not enough gas.
Yeah, I read something about it, and it came up, and it like missed or something, and then they just watched all the supplies head right back down. Nice, and we're piggybacking on them to get into space, so that's great for the astronauts.
Yeah, maybe you know fix that one before I volunteer for the next one.
Yeah, well, and it really it's upsetting to me being since I was a kid being obsessed with space and. Wanting to be an astronaut, which is one of the reasons why I went into the Air Force and ended up flying planes. Cause I just, when I was a kid, I had this record player and it had, the first space shuttle flight and it had, all the communications between Houston and the space shuttle. Uh-huh. And I used to sit there and just put it on and listen to it. And just, I mean, I couldn't have been much older than Maddie, maybe a little bit older than that. I think they went up in 80, 79 or 80.
Yeah.
So I was about 4 years old, four or five. And I used to just listen to it over and over. And I had a space shuttle and I used to watch the space shuttle spin around. I had space shuttle Legos. I always wanted to be an astronaut.
Did you eat that freeze-dried ice cream?
No, I've actually never had that. Drank my Tang, though.
Did you ever get the plan that you were in? Like, I mean... Come on, guys. Let's take this thing up to space.
We used to call it hanging on our fingertips at 27,000 feet. That was like that was high for our airplane. Our airplane was I think it's the last prop plane. It's a jet. Technically, the engines are jet, but it drives a prop. It's a C-130. It's the last one in service. I can't think of any other props. They might have a few like I don't know little planes for. Doing this and that, but as far as a fleet of aircraft, C-130 is the last one with that. So no, we would take off. Our area of operation was low. We like to fly low in like the hundreds of feet, not thousands of feet. So so we weren't really meant. We weren't designed to fly really high and really far, although we could do that. Yeah. So my obsession led to I ended up going into I got out of college with a history degree. And what are you going to do with that?
Yeah,
especially a history degree with a 2.63 GPA.
Yeah, you're a late bloomer.
I guess I was. I don't know. I was a kid. I didn't know what I was doing in college. And I just took the first job someone offered me. They're like, here, sell mutual funds. I'm like, all right, that's what I'll do. Skyscraper filled with 20-something college grads sitting at cubicles. It was awful, awful. I was so depressed. I thought that was going to be the rest of my life. Here I was a kid wanting to fly into outer space, and then there I was sitting
filing
at a cubicle answering phones. And then I went to it was down in Boston, downtown Boston, which was great.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, as a 20 something, we used to go and after work we'd go and just buy tickets off of people selling them on the street, Red Sox tickets. We'd go watch the Sox. Yeah, and then we'd go out to bar. I mean, it was great. We were making decent money for young guys just having fun, but just always in the back of my mind. And I think
you're like, should I be military or Wolf on Wall Street?
In the back of my mind, I always wanted to be the first graduate of my high school with a confirmed kill. And I wanted to travel distant places, see exotic people, and then shoot at them. That was from Full Metal Jacket or something like that. Yeah, yeah. So, I was going, the Tall Ships were in town, and I was down on the coast or on Boston Harbor. We were having lunch, and I watched all these sailors walking by, and I saw these two foreign sailors. Or one was American, the other one was probably Filipino or something. And they stopped and saluted each other, and I was like, holy crap, that's pretty cool. Then I immediately went back and looked up programs, and then the Air Force just kind of made sense. And I'm like, oh, I'm still going to do this flying thing. And then from that point on, it all just sort of happened. Like, yeah, it was just crazy. Luck. Yeah. And then it was one of those weird things. I mean, it was a blink of an eye. And next thing you know, I'm flying a combat mission into Iraq. I'm like, what is this? What roller coaster am I on? But I don't regret it. You look at it and it's, you know, it's what makes life interesting. I have friends that stayed working desk jobs and everything. And sure, they got nice houses and big TVs and probably vacation to some pretty nice places. But I wouldn't trade my experiences for the world. I mean, yeah. I've been to Africa, I've been to all over Europe. I was in the cradle of civilization. So it was kind of an interesting thing. Plus, I know now what it's like to get shot at. So
yeah,
makes me that much tougher. That I'm going to use to segue into the, because we were talking about the Hubble telescope. So what made me think about it was I was reading this article with a guy said, imagine the bacteria at your fingertip. Probably millions of them, maybe billions, I don't know. I guess I should know, I'm in medicine now, but you got a bunch of little things that you can't even see sitting on the tip of your finger. And they're all going about their bacterial business. They're just doing whatever bacteria do. They reproduce and they eat and they poop and then they die. And think about, they do that their entire existence without ever thinking what's beyond your fingertip. They're too small to ever make it beyond your fingertip. Maybe they'll die in a Purell incident.
Although we may be under somebody's fingertip.
Exactly, I'm gonna get to that. So they last their whole lives just sitting there on the fingertip, sometimes ending up where they don't want to be. That's the same thing as us going about our lives and not pondering everything that's going on up in the universe. And I hope to instill in my kids, I sound like I'm honking my own horn or tuning my own horn here, but I'm not. I was just lucky enough that at a younger age, something inspired me to do more or see more than what's just around my immediate view. I felt like I had to see more. You get distracted. We're humans. We get distracted. We get distracted over things like granite countertops and
wood floors.
Wood floors. And you get distracted about things that are around you. Or you throw on the TV and you watch something stupid. And that's fine. I mean, we are human. That's what happens. We argue. We have human things that go on. But you have to take that moment to stop and just look around and just, you have to be and marvel at what we have. And we're lucky enough that we're kind of born, or we're raised right on this cusp of just knowing so much. I mean, we're with technology, the Hubble telescope, I was 12, I said, when that came up, and we're seeing in our little area here, going about our little human business, and we're not marveling at what's around us. It's kind of a waste of our time. I think it's a waste of our time. We think of ourselves and our lives as so important. And for the most part, in our existence, it is important, right? I mean, because what else do we have? We have what's between our ears, which tells us what reality is, right? Consider this, okay? On a clear night, we can see about 2,500 stars. So you look outside right now, you're going to see 2,500 stars. That represents 1/100 millionth of the total stars in our galaxy. So just the night sky when you can look up, 1/100 millionth, that's 2,500 stars. The Milky Way galaxy is 100,000 light years in diameter. So a light year is around the Earth 7 times in 1 second. That's light speed. 7 times around the Earth in 1 second. So a second into hours, into days, into weeks, into months, into years. One light year, you think about that. It's not even comprehensible what one light year is. And then you add that by 100,000. So if someone was on one end of the universe and had a powerful enough telescope and they aim it over at us and they look, they're going to see Neanderthals.
Yes. It's bizarre.
Pretty much. Yeah. And that's all they'll be able to see. Unless they can come over here. If the Milky Way were the size of our planet alone, our sun would be 1/50th of a millimeter in size. 1 millimeter. No, I'm sorry. 1/50th of a millimeter is our sun compared to that. So that's another way to kind of give yourself an idea. It's just how much. And that, remember, we're just talking local. That's just our galaxy. We're getting to something here. Just bear with me. So the Milky Way galaxy is estimated at 100 billion to 400 billion stars. And I never... When you hear about like the deficit of trillions, or you hear about, can you comprehend that number?
No, just keep adding zeros.
Yeah, visually I can't comprehend it. I don't know what a there's a website. You ever look at the website, or it's a meme that shows you like what $100 looks like stacked up, and then what $1,000, and then they end up filling like a stadium.
Right.
Yeah. And I think they went to the U.S. deficit at the time, which was probably 10 trillion. Now we're at 20 trillion. Who's counting? But it filled up most of the stadium. And that's thin little bill. So it kind of gives you an idea of the size. But still, I don't think our brains can comprehend numbers that big. I like things shrunk down, because it just keeps me up at night when I think of things like that. So 1995. So remember... Now we're in our galaxy, 100 mm-hmm. billion to 400 billion stars. 1995, scientists took a 10-day-long exposure of a picture of a black spot in the sky. So they actually looked up and they said, here's a dark spot in the sky. We're going to aim the Hubble at it, open the shutter for 10 days. This spot, if you look out in the sky, it encompassed, like if you take a tennis ball, 100 meters in front of you. Uh-huh. That's the size of the spot in the sky, or that's the percentage of the sky that they were looking at.
Right.
So tiny, not even like a sliver of the moon. When they were done, what they saw was, you can Google it now if you're listening. Google along. Read along with... beep. Change the... remember
those
things?
Turn the page.
Yeah. So Hubble Deep Field, it's called the Hubble Deep Field. That's all it is. So when you look at that picture, and I had it here... Basically, every single little dot that you see in the picture doesn't represent a star. It represents a galaxy. So if you look at it, and it's kind of cool looking because you see all these little disks, all these little, almost what you would picture in your mind as what a galaxy looks like. Well, that's just our galaxy, actually, that picture you took up. You look at this picture, thousands, and it actually has 10,000 little points of light. And they look at it and like, wow, look at all those stars. 10,000 stars in just that little area. And then they're like, wait a minute. And they blew it up and they said, those aren't stars. Those are individual galaxies. So you're looking up in the sky, the size of a tennis ball, 100 meters out, 10,000 galaxies just from that field of view. Each one of those galaxies has approximately 100 billion stars. So, and that, again, remember, little tiny spot. And we're looking at such a tiny, little spot in the sky. Then they figured out the number of stars. So they took that and they did some calculations and they figured out the amount of stars in the universe is right around 10 to the 22nd or 10 to the 24th, which equals roughly 106 trillion stars, which I don't care. That's a big number.
Yeah, a lot of stars.
You can just make up a 6 trillion, whatever. So folks at University of Hawaii came up and they said, no, we're going to figure out what that actually means to us. Because I guess they got time in University of Hawaii, because what they ended up doing was they estimated all the grains of sand on Earth. So think of every single grain. Just think about your beach, your favorite beach. Think of all the grains of sand on that beach. Number you can't even comprehend.
Right.
It's this beach. They figured out the entire Earth. They took every grain of sand, and they figured out that there's 10,000 stars per grain of sand on every beach on the Earth. Big number.
God, that's crazy.
10,000.
And then I think, did it mention more about some sort of how many Earth-type planets would be in that?
Yeah, yeah. So now you have all those. There is, I think they said, and this is just, now we shrink it back down. So now we see the size of the universe.
What we're dealing with, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now shrink it back down to our galaxy. And they figured that within our planet there, or I'm sorry, within our galaxy, they figured there's 100 Earth-like planets per grain of sand. So wow. Now, yeah, so per grain of sand on every beach, on every beach in the entire world,
and there's every planet.
On every planet, there's 100 Earth-like planets. So this might be getting confusing.
There's 100 Earths on 100 stars in 100 galaxies.
No. There's 100 Earths for every grain of sand.
On your favorite beach. On my favorite beach.
On the entire planet. All right? Are you following me?
I got it now.
So, with all those Earths, and then they figured, I don't remember what it is, the math just stinks, but it all gets boiled down to there's 1 billion Earth-like planets and 100,000 intellectual civilizations just by odds alone. Even if you take the lowest part of all those numbers, you say, let's just subtract a little bit. That's still the lowest number they can come up with, 1 billion and 100,000 intelligent civilizations that have to exist in our galaxy. Yeah, that's our galaxy.
Yeah.
So you can do the math to figure out beyond that, but that's just our galaxy and our universe. Who knows? So the question is, where are they?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know if it's, as you said, when you're so many light years away,
mm-hmm.
I know that there's a star system, I think, in one of the galaxies that has like a, they call it like the fingers of God.
Yeah, yeah, I remember I saw the pillars of God.
Yeah, and they said, oh, they took a photo of it, I think, with the Hubble.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the people looking at it, the scientist said to them, you know, that's no longer there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just gone.
Yeah, time.
So, yeah, so now they took another photo recently and they saw that, you know, the pillars are kind of deteriorating
mm-hmm.
because, you know, with the time lapse and everything.
We can't even, time screws us every which way. I mean, it completely, did you see Interstellar? You ended up watching that?
No, do not. Spoiler alert.
Everyone dies at the end. So they, I'm just kidding.
He's Luke's father.
So time really, really throws us for a loop. It pretty much keeps us where we are because we can't go. I mean, what are we? We build a spaceship. We go into outer space and what? Travel for the fastest spaceship we have right now would take 18,000 years to get to the closest planet to us right now, or not planet, closest star, Alpha Centauri. I think that's what it is. If a cosmologist, or which I'm pretty sure no one around here is. Ever listens to this, they'll be like, you're completely wrong. But whatever it is, the next star, we wouldn't get there for 18,000 years. So it's not even relevant.
But then, you know, with technology, we don't know, you know, in the next, you know, 10, 15, 50 years, what they're going to come up with. I mean, I always watch these shows where it's like, oh, you know, how do we make our spaceships fly faster and mm-hmm. longer? Like, do you put a solar windsurfer on it, or you know, do these nuclear explosions behind
Silver
it?
Silver Surfer, is that what you're saying?
Like a huge kite, uh-huh. A solar kite.
You're saying a kite would actually—that's the answer. I think I get it. Yeah, you're catching the radiation or something. Solar winds.
Yeah, so you could. It would. You need to be able to travel far
mm-hmm. without losing
a lot of power, or you know, be generating power as you go.
And then you got to stop. Think about that one.
Yeah, how do you stop?
Yeah, so you're going.
Where the brakes.
Mm-hmm. And the faster you go, so let's say you're approaching the speed of, let's say you're doing half the speed of light. Time is going normal for you, and back home, it's sped up. And like I was saying at the beginning, if people are just focused on their cars and on their countertops, I'm messing with you with that one, you know. So if people are just focused on everything that's around them and getting completely tied up on that, which again, like I said, we have to. That's all we have. We're humans, right? We have to do this stuff. I mean, we're that's what we're meant to do. But if you don't think about things like, if you're going the speed of light away from the Earth or close to it, time changes, and that's a fact. Like, you go out for a year and come back, I don't know what the actual calculations are, but when you come back, everyone's old, and you're like, what's going on? I've only aged a year. They took atomic clocks, and they measured one up in orbit and one down here, and
what happened?
The one up in orbit ended up ticking slower than the one on... Why? Did you hear that
before? No.
It's Einstein's relativity. If you, theory of relativity, if you come walking towards me and I'm walking towards you, two objects approaching each other, we can't tell. I mean, it's infinitely small, but time is moving different. So you think about a planet that's far away, even the fact that they're existing right now, it's irrelevant. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's no way we could have reached them. There's no way they could reach us. It's basically two different realms of reality.
So why would you set up a system like that where you would have such... us here, and then potential for someone else in another location, and time being.
Like, why would
you? If you were, God for the day, why would you set up a system like that?
Never thought of that. Because
to keep just the reality of meeting another would really blow our minds.
Well, I guess maybe it's just complete and total isolation. Yeah. And maybe each planet is just in its own little realm of existence, and it's never meant to see the other one. And and thus we'll get into the Fermi paradox. I'll get to this. I've been talking about it since our first I read it once and I was just blown away by it. Yeah. So let's go deeper into the rabbit hole. Warning, you might want to turn off now, because actually I think everyone already did turn off the fourth sentence. They're like, all right, I'm done with this. he's talking stars and
so he's a pilot, he went up into space.
Okay, so we know that the universe itself is approximately 13.8 billion years. I think that's what it is. Again, I could be wrong. I'm a PA, damn it, I'm a doctor, not a pilot. I'm a PA, not a navigator. The universe is approximately 13, let's just call it 13 billion years old. Now, take another society. We'll call it Planet X, okay? And let's say Planet X is just a little bit older than us. It started up just the way it worked out. That planet came into existence 2 billion years before us. And we're about 3.4 billion years old. I think that's what we are. So 5 billion years ago, this Planet X starts up.
Okay.
So that means they're 2 billion years ahead of us. So where we are right now, think about 2 billion years down the road, that's where they would be. We can't comprehend, nowadays, we can't comprehend 50 years down the road. I don't know what's going on in 50 years.
Right.
I'm guessing we're going to be a bunch of...
cyborgs.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's why we're going to be a bunch of jellied brains. And remember on Futurama? How the you never watched that?
Watch
you got to watch that. Futurama's great. They're basically, there's all these celebrities from, because Futurama obviously takes place in the future, and all the celebrities have been thawed and their brains are sitting in these jars and with robot bodies. And so they have all these I don't think that's entirely unlikely. I mean, who knows, Ted Williams might be swinging away.
Yeah, see what happens.
His brain's frozen.
Yeah.
And isn't Disney guy Walt Disney. The Disney guy, what's his name?
What's that guy?
The guy
Walt. What was his last name?
The guy who invented it. So.
You called him Walter.
2 billion years older than us. So 2 billion years from now. No idea. I mean, we're talking about organisms that probably just float around. Think of it this way, okay? If you decide to build a road from here... like the one they're building over across the street there. They take down the trees, they build a road. Do the builders stop at every anthill and bend over and be like, okay, guys, listen, we got a steamroller coming through here, so we're just going to ask you to move or maybe we can purchase this little plot of land from you, and then we're going to... No, we don't give a... We just plow right over them, right? You don't even think about them. Even if they... And then the ones that are 2 feet off the road, you're not even... There's no... You don't give a crap about bugs, right? Because they're bugs. There's no... They're so much older than us. I mean, you know what I mean? They're...
They've been on the planet longer.
Yeah, but they don't have... They don't have the mindset, or we wouldn't waste our time talking with them. Well, the same could be for a civilization that's 2 billion years old, older than us. So they could be running around building super highways, and they see us down here, and they're like, why would I stop, waste all my time to go to that planet with those pink monkeys that are blowing themselves up? They're communicating with, making noise from their mouths. They look at, so get this, they look at each other, noise comes out of their mouths, and they know what they're saying. They still eat meat and... Yeah, we're not going to waste our time with them. So, right. I mean, that's...
We'll get off at the next stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Type of deal.
So, a society that's, let's say, 4 billion years ahead of us...
But then, so you do think that we do get some check-ins from time to time?
Maybe some sort of consciousness acknowledges that we're there, just like I won't step on a red ant hill. Well, I will, actually. I like to kick over the red ant hills. But you know, like if you see a red ant hill, you're going to look at it and acknowledge it and probably not step on it, but I don't care what the ants are thinking or what strife they're going through. I don't even give them a second thought. So perhaps, I mean, anything's possible.
Right.
So now let's go in even deeper into the hole. So there's this whole idea with the Fermi paradox that we have three types of societies. A society that can harness all the energy on its host planet, Earth. And we're probably like a 0.5 to 0.7. Carl Sagan actually said, I think we're a 0.7. So we're not even a type 1 civilization. Type 2 civilization harnesses all the energy from its sun, from its host sun. Type 3 harnesses all the energy from its galaxy. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty efficient.
So, and someone who's 2 billion years ahead of us might be a type 3. So there you go. They wouldn't even.
So we're taking some of their power.
Mm-hmm. No. Yes. Or they could be using us. You never know. So with all that, why have we not seen anyone yet?
Yeah.
Or even heard a peep. SETI. Have you ever heard of SETI?
I believe those are the,
No, that's the Yeti.
The membranes off of the caterpillar.
Search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I thought you were going to go with Yeti.
No.
We're not talking Bigfoot today, but we will. We will. Don't you worry. I didn't play my Killbots theme song for this one either.
We didn't get any crickets or anything yet, so we got that.
Okay. So here's the very gist of the Fermi paradox. So we got all these different civilizations. Where are they? There's this idea of perhaps the great filter. What the great filter is, we don't know. It doesn't matter. But one, either we're the first type of civilization. Either maybe it takes this long for civilizations to become who we are, mm-hmm. these little pink monkeys. And either there's other ones out there, they're just either with us or slightly behind us, but we're pretty much the only one. So we haven't reached said great filter yet. Great filter means that a society gets to this one point and then it's wiped out. Gone. Start over, hit the reset button. I don't know.
Right.
We haven't reached, so that's the second part. Either we haven't reached that reset button yet, so we're screwed because it's right around the corner, or it's behind us and we're so rare that we've gone through this great filter, no other society has made it through that, and that's where we are today.
And so this is the Fermi...
The Fermi paradox, yeah.
What was the guy's name?
Fermi.
Was
not Furby. He was a little plastic man that repeated everything you said. Furry.
So we made it past the filter, and now we're just
on our
blazing
own.
Trailblazers, mm-hmm. just, you know...
Yeah, and maybe we're the ones that are going to evolve to this 2 billion year old transhuman,
and then thing. Start looking at other galaxies and planets and saying, mm-hmm. why bother?
And they said too that a planet that's 8 billion years or I forget now.
But now the sun will burn out in 5.5 billion years.
Oh, so really?
Got a little, yeah.
But you're harnessing the power of the galaxy, so it doesn't matter. You just find another one.
But then, I mean, Earth will, you know, the oceans will dry up. We'll have to start moving.
Yes.
Moving to another.
Well, that's the whole area. Point. Like, you wouldn't need just this.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
We would colonize.
So that's the Fermi paradox, all spawned by my love of the Hubble telescope. Now, I think you had a theory today when we ran into you. I want to hear this one, but tell me about...
So I was reading this article in...
Journal, right?
And not a science journal.
Damn
about
it.
Just some of the beginnings of the planet and really off the wall type stuff.
It's my favorite type of stuff.
So there was an article about how these dinosaurs, you know, they had millions of teeth and these underwater, you know, the sea creatures were just really, really vivacious and looked really threatening.
Like shark.
Yeah.
The big shark, mega shark.
And so, this article went on to say that, you know, they were planted here and that they were used in these, for entertainment on other planets. And that we were put
like
here.
Stand up?
Yeah. And so we were put here as we were a low breeder. We wouldn't overpopulate the planet, but just for feed. But yet somewhere along the line, one of these planets, there was some sort of, revolution, and so they sent a comet towards Earth to just kind of put the kibosh on the whole system. And so then from that, you know, we really started to proliferate. And so
wouldn't that mean that we had to be around when the dinosaurs were around?
Yeah, I mean the article was really not on mark historically, geographically. But I, you know, in another article I did read in a science journal, I believe when they started to clean the space station, they did find plankton in the water droplets as they were cleaning it, and the plankton had the composition of what we have here on Earth. And so I was always trying to figure out, like, oh, how would we get this, you know, plankton from our planet up into outer space.
Panspermia. But you got to try not to giggle when you say it. There is a theory out there that, and it's a held up theory. I mean, people really believe in this. There's scientists that believe in this, that microbiological organisms survived on the surface of asteroids that impacted the Earth and seeded life.
The rest of the
There's a, and I'm looking it up right now because I can't remember the name of it. There's a little bug. I don't think it's a bacteria. It's called like a bear or something. Not a bear, but it's a
the bug bear. Yeah, very popular.
I'm just gonna Google here. Ready? Microscopic pink bear.
Anyway, while Kevin's looking at Google.
Yeah, it's here. It is. Water bears, they're called. Look up. Look at this thing. Doesn't it look kind of look like a bear? So these things can live like in every piece of harsh. Like they can live in sub-freezing temperatures, like volcanic temperatures in outer space. These things lived in outer space.
Huh?
Yeah.
How? In water droplets or?
I don't know. I don't know what medium they lived in, but yeah. So the idea is there that things can survive out in outer space, and they can. It's been proven that they can. Now, how does plankton get on there? I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean, I was trying to think about it as, I mean, you can't, like someone mentioned, oh, maybe a whale, or, you know, you get this mist going up into the sky, but I mean, wouldn't it burn up in the atmosphere?
Yeah, but how does it
get into space? I mean, is it on the space shuttle when it takes off?
I thought I guess because it takes off at the,
You know,
Cape Canaveral.
Yeah, by the ocean.
Water.
Yeah.
That makes sense, I guess. It could happen. I don't know. Whatever's possible. The chaos theory says whatever's possible can happen.
That's true.
So that would have to be, unless there was a contamination of some sort.
Yeah, but it goes back to, I think, what you were mentioning this afternoon as far as the comet and then coming through mm-hmm. and having all these different types of organisms on it to, you know, populate the planets as it's passing through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that maybe... So, as far as Mars, do you think that there was life there and they've gone through and they just didn't get past the filter?
Oh, like intelligent life?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, they say it was... Was it ever Earth-like? I don't know.
I thought it had water, but...
Yeah, I mean, Europa, one of Jupiter's ice moons, has
right.
water. And they think, actually, of all the places in our solar system that could have life, they think it's Europa.
Hmm.
They're actually sending a probe to look under the ice, which is kind of cool. No, but Europa, yeah, I don't... I just read these things.
And, yeah, there was another planet, Europa. And then Venus had a moon.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
There's a microplanet, too, called
Io, I think. Io.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's the name of it, yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, do I think... I used to think... I used to be very... Believe it or not, I was very structured and by the book. And I was like, no, that's impossible. I can't...
Forget about it.
Yeah. And then now I'm like, you know what? Sure, it's possible. I mean, I don't think it's actually that far out. If they told us tomorrow that they found life on Mars, I mean, would it... I don't think it would blow my mind. It'd be like, yeah, I mean, all right. Why not? Or if they found a signal from somewhere else, I mean, why not?
What was your theory with the gold?
That's not my theory. That's the Anunnaki. Check out Ancient Aliens if you ever have the chance. It used to be on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. They would, well, there's areas around the world, and I wish I remember the names of them. They all have like exotic names. These ancient places that their construction is just beyond typical or beyond normal, or that we would think for a place that's 10,000, 15,000 years old. That's what I just said. I don't remember the names.
So what was, what's the theory there?
Well, the theory is that if you ever watch this show, it's great. It's a great show. I mean, if you ever just want to turn your brain off and look at some of this stuff, that ancient aliens were here visiting and helped construct these ancient societies, civilizations, and then whatever, they disappeared for whatever reason. But I mean, there's I can't, it's right on the tip of my tongue. There's this place, I think it's in South America, where these rocks are cut in such precision, and they're so old, like, you know, like I said, 15, 20,000 years old, that they're sharp to touch. And they're square corners that are perfectly 100% square.
Mm-hmm.
Like and they can't figure out how an ancient civilization would have done this. There's no scratch marks from like maybe rubbing, like using another rock or something. They don't know how they were made. And that's one of just many. And if you, there's another one, an ancient astronaut carving. I think they found it either near the Mayan temples.
How do they know that it's an astronaut?
And it has, it's old. I don't know how old. And it has,
Neil Armstrong?
A dude, no. He's this dude on it that's literally flying. It looks like he's flying. He's got levers in his hand.
Here you go. I think I've seen it, yeah. It's...
Look at this guy. So, I mean, he's on, like, a rocket ship.
Yeah.
And how did they come... I mean, that's old. That's... I don't remember. It'll say here what it... or maybe it won't if I click the link. But, I mean, you look at it, and there's, like, levers and pipes and smoke and fire and... I mean, he's not wearing a mask, which, you know, if you're flying a thing like that, you should be wearing a helmet and proper breathing equipment. They also found in some of these areas little model airplanes, vertical stabilizers, different that you'd find on birds. So I'm a skeptic, and I'm a skeptic at heart, but it's so fun to look at this stuff and be like, you know, is it possible? Sure. I don't see why not. I mean, that's an astronaut. Right? That's an ancient astronaut. I mean, what? He's wearing moon boots, for Christ's sakes. He's wearing... I don't know. That stuff's wild. The theory of the Anunnaki was that they put us... And you have to Google it, because I don't remember the whole story, but their planet is suffering. They don't... Either they have, like, too much radiation coming through the atmosphere, or maybe it's global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up taking gold dust and putting it in the atmosphere to reflect the radiation. And so they biologically bred us little pink monkeys to crave gold. And they put us down here, and sure enough, we go after gold. We get it everywhere. We love gold. And then they come back every 10,000 years. I think their planet moves, so it comes within in our distance, and they land and pick up all their gold, kill us off, leave a few left, and do it again for another 10,000 years. That's the Anunnaki. Look it up. Pretty cool. Yeah, so that's that. The other thing I was thinking about, just kind of associate with that, with what's going on, you know, in Baltimore and South Carolina and all that stuff that's going on there, and we won't get into the political aspect of it or anything like that, but so you ever read Orwell or 1984 or Otto Huxley, any of these old guys that wrote about like dystopian futures? They talked about, so 1984, this Big Brother, that's where Big Brother came from, and it's a future where basically thought police, your every aspect of your life is controlled, and if you think outside the box, then you're basically killed. Mm-hmm. And it's just this horrible society. Everything's videotaped. You got videotapes in your room. They wake you up in the morning and you're in front of a TV screen. And same thing as I think it was Fahrenheit 451. They had the big TV screens. And reading those, you're like, there's no way. People just aren't going to allow cameras to be set up in your house.
Yeah, their life, yeah.
But everywhere you are now, you're on tape. And we're not, it's not the government that's doing it. It's we're doing it to ourselves. Where, and some of it makes sense. I mean, there's that idiot down in South Carolina who shot that guy running away. I mean, that worked in our favor.
Right.
Because otherwise, that wouldn't have, that, no one would have seen that.
No one would have seen that, yeah.
Today, or if you're not breaking law, or if you're doing whatever, we're tattling.
Walking down the street.
Yeah. Or you're having conversation. You know, people, there's no rules out there that says you can't be an asshole, right? So people are having private conversations and being jerks, but that's I mean, you're allowed to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. That's what you do in your private house. But now it's all on tape, and it's creepy. It's costing people careers. And I mean, some could say, does it mean it's a better?
Is it sharpening our society?
Is it, or is it infringing on everything? I mean, you can't, when you bring this up, you can't argue either way. You know, you can't say, well, I mean, but I mean, people have the right to be jerks.
Well, I saw today on the news that the guy got arrested in Hawaii for flying his drone in a national park.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's frowned upon.
Is it really? Well, they're more popular now. I mean, one landed on the White House lawn.
Yeah. But the guy was flying it over, like, the volcano and, you know, doing the loop-de-loops.
Mm-hmm.
And just having a great
technical
time.
Technical talk, loop-de-loops. It's your five-year-old,
well,
inner five-year-old.
Well, the pig was inverted. And we were...
giving him the bird? No, but the ones that actually kill people, like in Pakistan and stuff, they're just flying around. And they say these things might be automated at some point. That stuff's freaky.
Yeah.
All right.
So do we get to play the song again? Or?
No, we're not going to do it. We're going to do the closing song.
Oh.
This is all free music I found on the Free Music Archive. I'll give them a little plug. Free Music Archive at, I don't even know what the website is. Google it. Free Music Archive. They got a ton of free music, and it's all royalty free, so you can put it on your podcast and not get sued. This is why I'm not playing any of my favorite music, but I don't know. It does the trick.
Most definitely.
We're on iTunes under Wait, What If. Check out podcastland.com and look up Wait, What If on there and vote for us. You just click, actually I think you put your email address. You can do it once a month and it just gives us a little more visibility. We're working on the show, we're doing different things, trying to make it sound better. We have like 4 followers on Twitter now. Twitter is WWI podcast, WWI podcast, and we tweet some things here and there, and our email is waitwhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. waitwhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. And all my friends and neighbors who are listening and giving me pointers, thank you. And I want everyone to be on the show. So if I haven't asked you yet, ask me, because I probably forgot while I'm trying to write notes for the next show. that's about it. Thanks, Adam. I mean, Mr. X, for being on tonight. And hopefully next time when we have the Killbot episode, we'll have Moses on here, have a few more things to talk about, and we'll bounce some things off each other and really dive deep into the rabbit hole. Make sure you bring your tinfoil too.
Sounds fun.
All right.